I guess I would describe this lesson, or the meaning of this lesson, to be one of, or the intent, to be one of encouragement. I think, though, as I'm going through and preparing it, I think of the writer of Ecclesiastes. You go read Ecclesiastes, and you start going through that, it just can be very depressing if you don't approach it in the right way. And in a way, what we experience in this life, things that we don't necessarily control, can also be very depressing. There are a lot of things going on in the world that are, I suppose, discouraging would be an appropriate word, in terms of the things, the environment in which we live. It doesn't take, in fact, I was looking this morning, the news. I think there was another mass shooting, maybe more than one, mass shooting in Kansas City, where they went in and shot up 9 people, four or five of them died, and others were injured. And so when you look around in our country, we just live in a time of danger, uncertainty. We frequently see things being reported overseas where there's war, bombings, you know, suicidal bombings. It makes you a little bit maybe anxious to die. Do I ever even want to go overseas? If you have the privilege of doing that on vacation, you know, but I'd be able to get back alive. We've got terrorism here. I just mentioned this mass shooting that went on. These kinds of things happen periodically, and seems like, to me anyway, maybe they're reported more, but they seem more frequent. There are cases of just general civil disobedience. I guess you can read every weekend, or every Monday, about murders in most weekends, probably murders in Houston, murders in one that stands out because it gets reported all the time, murders in Chicago. You watch the news, you see people are in the streets. You look at Hong Kong, you look at Baghdad now, there's all kinds of demonstrations going on. So the world is just generally messed up. Not new, but that's the way it is. I guess one thing that it seems more, heightened right now, at least to me, I've lived 75 years, and at least probably 55 of those or 60 of those, I've been not a political junkie, far from it, but I've voted and I've looked at things in terms of politics, and politics has basically gone off, in my assessment, have gone off the rail. So you wonder, well, what's the outcome? You know, what's going to be the outcome? What's going to happen to this country? Very unusual country we live in. We're blessed with that, both from the standpoint of prosperity and the freedom we enjoy. So those things are going on around us, things that could be concerning us. People, because of those things, are sometimes very anxious. I was struck by, didn't watch it, the clips. I was struck by this young lady from Sweden, Greta Thunberg, I think's her name. But in any event, she was leading demonstrations with respect to climate change. And people were, particularly young people, are concerned about that. They hear it day in, day out in school. You see it in the news. And there are actually people who are being treated for anxiety that arises out of environmental concerns. Will the world be here? Will I be able to breathe the air? Types of things. So all of these are things that can fill you with anxiety. Not to mention the fact that you might be wondering, well, what about my children? Not just about me, what about my children? What about my grandchildren? What's life going to be like for them down the road? So the question is, what kind of attitude should we have? What should be our mindset? And that's what we want to consider as we enter into this study. And I think, by and large, and you can get to the bottom line, I'd probably just say this, and most of the people in this audience would say, yep, that's right. Let's move on. And that is, We just have to recognize that God's in control. God made a promise. What's going to happen to this earth?
It's going to burn up.
Am I worried about environmental problems? Yeah. Only in the sense of providing for some degree of responsibility. I have responsibility, just like I don't go out and drive all over. Somebody paints a line down the middle of the street, I don't drive all over it. I try to pay the laws. But am I worried about the world ending because of an environmental catastrophe like that? I'm not. Maybe you are. I'm not. Because God said He's going to destroy the world, but it isn't going to be because we can't breathe the air. You already know that. So take solace in that fact. So we're going to look at this idea of the sovereign rule of God. Who is in control in this world? And before we get into that, let's just do a little bit. I've actually defined what sovereign is. What is sovereign? What's the meaning of it?
Supreme ruler,
especially
the monarch. God is the supreme authority, and all things are under His control.
Okay, I underline the word supreme. Supreme ruler, supreme, the idea of superiority, the idea that they're above, something that's sovereign is above all other things. And that's the God that we want to look at. Is He the sovereign ruler of this world that we live in?
We also put that it was innate. It didn't come by someone else giving Him the power to the world.
In God's case, His is, Linda calls it innate. God has sovereignty. But in fact, He's God. Nobody delegated it to Him. A king, Queen Elizabeth is a sovereign of the nation of the United Kingdom. But that's something that was given to her, passed down to her in her case, through the years. But way back when, somebody in that line was established. And of course, just the fact that the government is delegated by God. We know that from Romans. I really was a little bit, and I could spend probably the whole class, or we could spend the whole class talking about God's sovereign rule, just looking at the book of Moses' book, first five books of the Bible. But I wanted to spread it out a little bit. But we're going to start where God started. And that's in Genesis 1, where Moses started in this case, talk about Moses. What did Moses say about God that would make us want to walk away and say, yeah, I have confidence that God's in control? So I ask you, looking at Genesis 1 through 3, you could come up with a number of answers to this question. But what are three things that go on, at least three things that go on in this section, that indicate God is supreme, sovereign?
God created the earth. God created the mankind.
Is that one or two?
That's two.
Okay. So God created. Or how does that show He's anything?
God said it was good.
Who gave Him that authority? Who gave Him that power? The ability. It's axiomatic. It's evident, self-evident. This is the God, through His creation, is the sovereign, supreme authority. And by establishing just the world we know, not only this world, but the unseen world. And it demonstrates God's sovereign rulership. Okay, from that, move on. What's the second? Now I'm going to include creation of man, creation of animals, plants, etc. That's all under creation. What else?
His authority in 2:16, Lord God commanded.
Okay, the Lord God commanded. What did He command? Who did He command?
Man.
Man. What did He basically set up?
Man.
Okay, everything, law, he set out, or told, commanded, however you want to describe it, described to Adam and Eve the parameters by which they were going to exist on the earth in the Garden of Eden, didn't he? We're getting that right. Sovereign ruler. He's the God of the universe. And so he specified for his creation how they should behave. That's another one. Of course, they didn't listen. Did they? What's another case?
Power over life and death.
Okay, power over life and death. He said that a guy specified, very simple. I mean, you know, we look back on it, very simple. Of course, you know, if we were there, you know, nothing to say we wouldn't make the same decisions. But he said in place a very simple requirement. Do not eat of this tree. If you do. So not only did he create, not only did he command and set parameters for how they were to, how people were to live, how Adam and Eve were to live and what they were allowed, he told them on the other side of it what would happen to them if they didn't. Okay, that's easy. I could tell you that. Dawn? No. Craig, don't eat fish. Craig eats fish, he dies. Does that make me a sovereign ruler? A sovereign king? Does that make me God? No, it doesn't. God had the power to stand by and make a big change. He could bring about what he told Adam and Eve. Should you violate this, this will be the outcome. But he had control over. There's another one. I think of. What else? Anybody have
the authority to cast him out of the garden.
Okay, part of it, yeah. The authority to cast him out of the garden, and it went beyond that. Did that. But what else was associated? What was it, you know, in terms of what was going on with that, what's going on with it?
He's able to impart consequences on the entire mankind.
On all of mankind. We all have to live with it. And on, he did something else that's important to you and me today. Every man, really.
He was able to punish a party. So he has all the authority to have to punish towards all the party.
Jesus Christ, that shows that he has exactly. And you go on, what do you do? He cursed Satan. But what do you read in 3:15? Somebody read Genesis 3:15.
Promise of redeemer.
Sorry?
Promise of redeemer.
Okay. So, yeah, I think 3:15 is the first indication that there would be a individual out of the lineage of mankind that would overcome what Satan had done. You know, and the early indication or prophecy, first prophecy in my opinion, of Christ, the Redeemer, and salvation coming. So God had the authority to, he made the rules, threw man out of the garden because they violated the rules, but he had grace looking ahead and the authority to pardon man. So that was another thing. Anybody else have anything else to thought of? Okay.
Well, it's somewhat parallel. We've got the definition of sovereign. It says authority, power, rank. And somewhat parallel to our government. And if you've got the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. So power and authority are not the same, necessarily. So creation is power, authority, command, judicial to execute judgment.
Yeah, good point. There are other things, I just put in an example of Genesis, creation, get it started, but there are other things that go on before we ever get to Isaiah. You know, we could spend years talking about it.
But there are a couple of real major events that happened along the way that also indicate the same thing. The flood, talk about the flood. It shows God's authority and his supreme rule over the universe. The time of Tower of Babel, or Babel, whichever we want to pronounce it, he, because of what men were doing, chose to distribute mankind and confuse their languages. I mean, the only language I confuse is mine, which I do all the time. But God had the power and authority and ability to do that for mankind. And of course, maybe a classic is Exodus. I do want to read a couple of things out of Exodus. Exodus 5, we're all very familiar, I think most of us are, with the account of in Exodus and beyond, the people of God's people being redeemed from their slavery. Let's read verse 1, 5:1. And afterward, Moses and Aaron came and said to Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness." But Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go." If you drop over to chapter 7, verse 5, it says, "The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst." And then over 9, chapter 9, reading in verse 13, "Then the Lord said to Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For this time I will send all my plagues on you and your servants and your people so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For if by now I had put forth my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, you would have been cut off from the earth. But indeed, for this reason, I have allowed you to remain in order to show you my power, in order to proclaim my name through all the earth." And so, in the case of course, Egypt and Pharaoh, he said, "Who is this God? I don't know him." He was going to come to know him, in no uncertain terms. And God had the being who God is, he was able to execute his rule through Moses over that nation and have his people win. Okay? Any other things y'all want to comment on that before we move into Isaiah?
Well, one thought back to 3:15.
Yeah.
So we talked about a redeemer and that sort of thing, but the sovereignty of God is established there. The great beginning, that sovereignty God is over the great competitor for our emotions, for our will, for those things that would affect us, you know, to do what is right and wrong. So the power that is shown there can save the great competitor. There's sovereignty of God. I think that's really the first thing we need to watch out for.
Right, which will, you know, well, will and will. We'll get into the second lesson. Yeah, Jeff.
Well, you know, there's a number of things about creation that shows God's sovereignty and his rule and his authority and power. The one thing that I think sometimes folks get, want more evidence, and things like this. There's so much evidence that's there. If we can go back and take it to one thing, he created an atmosphere and everything that we need on this earth for us to be able to breathe and live and get our nourishment and everything else. It goes back to the very our very existence, of course, but those very, I think what a lot of folks do, simple things that show how great is powerful.
Yeah. We talked about this in last class, I think. I mentioned this. What did God say about his creation in chapter 1? Very good.
And I tell you, it's amazing. A little sidetrack. I'm an engineer by training. I don't sit around and read science journals, but it kind of strikes me sometimes to read things about nature in particular. And the it's just fascinating. It speaks to Jeff's point that, you know, there are things we see, and, you know, I know I can't see the air, but I know it's there and I breathe it. But there are things we don't see normally that contribute to our very existence. That God had the wisdom, power, just the nature of God to bring into being that serves our well-being. A little sidetrack. It just amazes me here. Look at those kind of things. Some of the strangest things in nature. And yet, nature works together to support life on this earth. So, let's move on to Isaiah. Of course, Isaiah prophesied 739, 740, down to 690. So he prophesied for those years. You had something to say? Okay. In Isaiah 13, he made a prophecy. What was it?
Babylon would fall to the Medes.
Okay, Babylon would fall to the Medes. And I ask the second question, what happened?
Babylon fell to the Medes.
Was there any indication at the time that Babylon was under threat from Medes? No. And this would happen 200 years later. That Babylon would fall to the Medes. And yet here's God, says it's going to happen. And in fact, it happens. I ask you another question. You may have a little trouble with this question. In Isaiah 10, at least you may not get my answer. Isaiah 10, where did y'all put down?
The world punished them by sending a godless nation against them to plunder them and it would be Syria.
Okay, that's accurate. Anybody else have anything else? Sorry?
Use the Assyrians as the rod.
Okay. That's heading for what I wanted to focus on. Sorry, get to Isaiah a little better. Isaiah 10. Look at down toward the end of that section, down in verse. Actually, I want to just focus for a moment on verse 15. I think I'll make the point. But it applies to the way God used nations. Is the axe to boast itself over the one who chops with it? Is the saw to exalt itself over the one who wields it? That would be like a club wielding those who lift it, or like a rod lifting him who is not wood. The idea that God... And this, again, to me, shows the supremacy of God. God uses other nations as tools. And does it matter if they're wicked or righteous?
No.
Doesn't make any difference. If they're wicked, we don't talk about what difference that makes, but, you know, he uses nations as tools. And while he uses them to punish others, bring judgment to others, the wicked also, those nations do not, because they've carried that out, do not earn a pass if they're wicked as well. And we see that over and over in history. Anything else on that? Just struck me about the nature of God.
It's just, what came to me is that God is sovereign over all the armies of the earth. Even today, God is in control of everything. And even today, God still uses other nations to punish other nations. Because he's sovereign over all things.
Okay. Alex wants to get to the end of the lesson, probably.
I think this
is... Right. I was just going to say that here that he uses nations to judge other nations. We also see he uses nations to save other people. In the case of Joseph through Egypt, saved all of Joseph's family, but... mechanism through Egypt itself.
Right. To an evil country.
I was going to mention that there in 10, 12, and 13, it shows how God knows the heart of man, and yes, he uses nations, but then he hates when they say, by the power of my hand, by the power of my wisdom, by the power of this and that, I did such and such. And it goes through down through the history, even to Israel and Judah, when they get so big in their own minds and think that it's by their strength that they've done this.
In the last two classes we've had, it was blatantly obvious that I have a view about pride, how God views pride. God does not view pride of individuals nor of collectively nations or arrogance favorably. And that's been true all through history. That's probably a study of another study, but that's true. Okay, let's move on. We will. May not finish at that rate. At my rate. In Isaiah, of course, is rich in this stuff. In Isaiah 13, the whole section, 13 on to 23, there are a series of oracles made. And the question is simple. Who was it directed at? What were they about? What was going to be the outcome? And what happened? What did y'all put down? And I don't know if you read through this. The other thing that I've noticed, and I don't know if you did, is the why. But let's start with the who and what happened. What was prophesied and what happened? Isaiah 13:14. Who? All right, speak up. I know y'all have the answers, and I'm not as deaf as Steve, but I still don't hear that well. I think I heard Babylon, right? And so what was being prophesied?
Brought down.
It brought down. Judgment. And we've already talked about that. Did it happen? Yeah, it happened. Look in 13:14 in verse 13. Now here he's talking about the king of Babylon. He said, take up this back and forth, take up this taunt against the king of Babylon. And down in verse 13 it says, but you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the assembly. In the recesses of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. Nevertheless, you will be thrust down, etc. So there's this arrogance, this attitude, lack of humility on the part of the nation, the leadership, in this case, king. All right, second one, on Isaiah 14. Okay, Assyria. What was prophesied for Assyria? Trampling them, right? I was breaking down. Did it happen?
Yes.
Okay. How about Moab? We're going to see they're not necessarily words in these oracles. There's a word that will always be associated with whatever God was going to do. Summary word. That's a fair one word I was thinking about. That's a good word. Destroy their kingdom, wouldn't it? It's a judgment, isn't it? Judgment on them for who they, what they, how they are, what they're doing, and as a result, their kingdom will be judged. I mean, will be destroyed. They will no longer have power. And Moab falls in that category. I'm sorry, Syria. Did I say Moab? Did we get to Moab? Moab's the same thing. How about Isaiah 17? Who's Damascus? Sorry? And Aram. Who's that? great silence. Would we all run out of study at this point?
Syria.
Okay. And so what's going to happen to him? What's that word? It's going to be judged. What happens?
Verse 14, it says, before morning, they are no more.
How about Isaiah 18? Okay, Ethiopia. What's their outcome? That's what the, now again, I can either say what was prophesied or what was the outcome. Is there a difference?
No.
That's the point. There is no difference. Every one of these, there is no difference. Edom and Arabia. Those you may, particularly Arabia. I had a little trouble on Arabia. And Edom as well, as far as historically speaking. Are they nations now? Yeah, I mean, you can, by the way, I have trouble, but you can actually go back and trace the history on these, some of these nations, a lot of these nations. Some of it's biblical, some of it's secular. And you just see over and over again, in the time frame we're talking about, these nations will fall. Just like God said. Let's get closer to home. Isaiah 22. Somebody said something, I didn't hear it. Who is this valley of vision?
Somebody answered your question. I don't know where it was. I got echoes hearing, but I
Jerusalem. The face is sit further back, that's what it is. Jerusalem. And of course Isaiah, you know, the intent was to bring about change, but here's Jerusalem. What's going to happen to Jerusalem? We're going to read about that. We're going to read more about that later. What's going to happen to Jerusalem? Yeah, going into captivity. And by a nation that God's already said is going to be destroyed, judged. They're going to go in captivity under whose hand? Babylon, right? Alright, so, and then Tyre in Isaiah 23. Same thing. And Greece, thanks to Greece, eventually destroyed Tyre. What's common, and we kind of hit on this, and, you know, talking about arrogance. What, said another way, what's common about these nations, all of them?
They were all destroyed.
That's common.
None of them escaped the judgment of God.
None of them escaped death. Both those are good answers. They were, well, even Jerusalem. Judah was an idolater as well, so they practiced idolatry. Pride.
Built
for God first. I'm going to roll all this into one thing. Were they righteous? Full of iniquity, aren't they? And God doesn't suffer iniquity well, whether it's a nation or it's a person. And that's the nature of these. What Isaiah 46, I said, what conclusion can be reached from the above events? I mean, you read all this, it's interesting. But what's it prove? I think Isaiah 46 pretty well addresses it. What does it prove? What can you conclude?
Nations rise and fall by the hand of the word of God.
Who
plans it and it takes place.
Okay. Nations rise and fall by the hand of God. Isaiah makes a statement, or a statement is made by God. Verse 9, remember the former things long past, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is no one like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things which have not been done, saying my purpose will be established and I will accomplish all of my good purpose. My good pleasure. Can anybody confront God and stop him? No. He's the sovereign ruler of these nations. Over and over and over again, he proves that point in the Old Testament, these nations. Okay, let's go on. Daniel, get a little more, I guess, narrow focus with Daniel. Daniel 2, what did Daniel conclude? Based on the vision that he interpreted.
It's God that removed the kings and established kings.
Maybe he says he was in control. And Daniel, in verse 21 of chapter 2, it is he who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings, establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. God, Daniel acknowledged who this God was and the sovereignty of this God. He had, he had everything under his control as he chose to carry it out. If you go on and to a little further in the chapter, we have the dream or the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. What did Nebuchadnezzar conclude based on what he was told? Okay. And what was the prophecy here? What did he learn from the dream that he had Daniel reveal?
He told Daniel, surely he's the God of God.
That's what he concluded. I agree, and that's what I want. That's the right answer. But what was he told? Okay, what kingdom would rise and fall? Maybe he's right. Okay, y'all probably can't hear Linda. But we got Babylon. He's talking, he's revealing himself, revealing the strength, the interpretation of to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is at the peak of his power, basically. And so he is probably feeling pretty good. But then Daniel, in his interpretation, says there's another kingdom of rise, the Medes, there's another kingdom after that, the Greeks, fourth kingdom after that, which we know is the Roman kingdom, and then there's something that's going to come in the middle of that, during that kingdom, and there would be a kingdom that would be established that would never end. And we'll talk more about that, I guess, a little bit later date. There's another one in Daniel 4, another dream. You have this tree. So what did there are certain things that were prophesied in this Daniel 4. What happened? What did Nebuchadnezzar do that brought about what was prophesied?
Glorified himself.
Go down to verse 34.
He
But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward the heaven, and my reason returned to me. And of course, this is after he spent his time basically behaving as an animal. And I blessed the Most High God, Most High, and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but He does according to His will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. And no one can ward off His hand or say to Him, "What have you done?" At that time, my reason returned to me, and my majesty and splendor were returned to me for the story, for the glory of my kingdom. My counselors, my nobles began seeking me out, so I was reestablished in my sovereignty. And we talked earlier about delegated sovereignty. Here's the case. And surpassing greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all His works are true and His ways are just. And He is able to humble those who walk in pride. Back up in verse 32, he was told he'd be in this situation until you recognize the Most High as ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever He wishes. So that would come about, wouldn't it? I said, what's the purpose? In the second part of that question, what's the purpose of these events? Daniel 4:17 tells you the purpose of it. Said that we just read, in order that the living may know that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind. So God has control. I mean, I don't know how to draw an underline on that, any stronger or bolded or anything else. God has control. And I don't, you know, we talk about the providence of God, and I don't understand the providence of God. I don't understand. I can't tell you when this is that. But I have no doubt about it. Time and time again, God has shown His authority, His sovereignty, and His rule in the affairs of mankind. And we see it over and over and over again with respect to nations. Our time is up, but I haven't heard our bell up. I haven't heard the bell, so let's pick up number 4. What did Daniel tell Belshazzar?
Sure, should have learned
what happens to his father, humility. And you stupid son, why didn't you learn better? Sometimes we're that way, I guess. We don't take care of things. Verse 21, 22. He was driven away from mankind. His heart was made like that of beasts, and his dwelling place was that with the wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the Most High God is ruler over the realm of mankind, and he sets over whomever he wishes. Yet you, Belshazzar, have humbled your heart. So we'll stop there. We will, Lord willing, finish up this basis upon section D, and then we'll go on into New Testament. Lesson 2. Thank you.